Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Top Cow Chronology episode. It's also a 12 days of the Comic Source episode as we're counting down toward Christmas and releasing a bunch of content for you all to consume. Hopefully, it's bringing you some good cheer. This is the, as I said, Top Cow Chronology project. This is the fourth and final issue for today's episodes. They're all Top Cow Chronology episodes, so big chunk of Arcanum read and analyzed for you. For those not familiar, the Top Cow Chronology project is a project where we're reading all the comics in the Top Cow Artifact universe in chronological order, not publication order, but in the order starting, you know, way back in ancient Egypt and moving up to present day. So there is a link in the show notes to that chronology, which was put together by a user on the Comic Vine forums who goes by the name of Condor. So we thank him for his hard work. And let's go ahead and dive into issue number 6 of Arcanum. So story and pencils by Brandon Peterson, Joe Weems, Marco Galli, Livesay, and Brandon Peterson on inks. We have Richard Eisenhoff, Jonathan D. Smith, Dean White, Matt Nelson, Greg Hammond, and Quantum Color FX on the colors. Dennis Heisler handles the letters. So a real who's who of talent. A lot of people worked on this issue. So it starts off, we see Matthew Royal. I'm assuming he's in the Athenium Theurological, his headquarters. He's there holding that sword that he got from Set all those years ago, as we learned the last issue. And it's interesting, he's quoting the Bible. He's quoting Genesis. He's talking about in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. You know, the second day he created light and darkness. So I guess he's reciting this because he sees himself as God. I'm not really sure. Maybe he's just fondly reminiscing about his days as a priest. It's interesting. We don't know why, but he walks through the theurological and heads into this room where a lot of the theurgists are basically trying to trace down the avatars of the good. They have kind of this illusion or this mock-up, this projection, I guess you'd say, of the planet, and they're using their magic to search for the avatars of the good. So Royal asks for a report, and they say, well, we haven't really detected any energy signatures. None of the avatars have been using their powers. We did get a trace in Rio, but when we sent people on site, it was several weeks old. And Royal's actually happy about this. He says, well, that's good. They're still hiding. As long as they're hiding, that means they won't interfere. And let me know if there's any news. So he leaves the room, he walks back out into the hallway, and before he can get very far, all of a sudden the sword is blasted out of his hand by what looks to be fire. And we see it's the other avatars of evil, the ones that fought alongside Franklin Blake, and Hosan, the one that has the flame powers, is saying, you know, you betrayed Blake, you slew him dishonorably with your treachery, you're playing him for a fool. But now who's the fool? And the big bruiser, the one that looks like almost like a human form of Bad Rock, Sato, he picks up the sword of Set. And he says, you're disarmed, you're outnumbered, you don't have your focus weapon. Apparently a lot of avatars have to have some sort of weapon, like Sato himself does with that double-edged axe, to focus their power through. And so Sato says, you are at our mercy. And Hosan adds, yeah, we have none. But before they can even think about attacking Matthew Royal, he uses his power and literally blows Sato's arm off, the arm that's holding the sword. And Royal says, now I think you are disarmed and you are at my mercy. Oh, sorry about the bad pun. And then he tells him, do you know the difference in our circumstances? You know, you guys are relatively new to your powers as avatars, you know, the magic that you wield that gives you specific powers, whether they be strength and super speed or flames or the ability to cast illusions that that Sony has, and he doesn't need that. You know, Royal doesn't. He's got so much more power than any of them, right? And he talked about it when he gained that power from Franklin Blake, right? So his whole thing was, I have to be careful using my magic because I don't want to burn myself up. I don't want to use up my life force to fuel my magic. I know, you know, he knows all these different spells. He has all this power at his fingertips, but he's reluctant to use it because of his mortality, his fragility as a human. And so now that he has Blake's power, the sky's the limit. You know, he's not limited like the other avatars where their magic is manifested in one way or another, whether, you know, it be flames or rock armor or whatever. And so he says that, and he's like, I've already forgotten more magic in my 800 years than you guys will ever know. I've always had focus. I just didn't have the power to, you know, use all my knowledge. And now, thanks to Blake, thanks to stealing, you know, his energy, his avatar energy, I do. And again, he's been around for so long and amassed so much knowledge. And he says as much to these three. He says, you know, you're mere babes in this world. So hold on to your baubles and charms if you need to, but don't mess with me again. Basically, he says, go back to your quarters and wait until I call you. You know, I don't need you anymore. I have enough power to handle on my own, but you could be useful. So, you know, go know your place, basically, is what he's saying. Go to your quarters. I'll call you if I have to. And then he tells him as he walks away, I don't want to have this talk again. So he walks into his study and asks the head of the cardinal that he has in there that Ming Chang spoke to a few issues ago. Just a sounding board, you know, somebody he tortured and killed, but yet kept his head alive for all these years to have somebody to talk to. And he says, well, that went better than I expected. You know, he's been waiting for those avatars of evil to make their move, basically, because he knew it was coming. And I suppose in a way he's kind of relieved that they finally made their move. Because now he doesn't have to expect it anymore. You know, with the level of power he just showed, it's certainly going to be a long time before they make any sort of move again, if at all. Because again, he just showed that he's so far ahead of them. Not only was he expecting the attack, he repelled it easily, basically. So I guess in a way, he's just there to gloat. You know, and again, the cardinal being kind of his sounding board. I mean, he doesn't have any friends. He's been around 800 years. I imagine he's kind of lonely, but it's kind of sad when you think about it, that the guy that he has to talk to, his sounding board, if you will, is this cardinal whose head he cut off a long time ago. Again, kind of strange going back to him talking about quoting the Bible verses early on, and then his one friend, his that he sees as a friend, or I don't even know if you could call it a friend, but the person he talks to is a cardinal. So maybe there are some religious roots that are running a little deeper than we necessarily think. But anyway, he's talking to the cardinal when he makes another bad joke, you know, saying something about short-sighted thinkers. They're never thinking far ahead. And he's like, oh, ahead, I'm so funny today. And then he implores the cardinal, hey, usually you're, you know, more talkative than this. There's a crude remark, or, you know, you're insulting my mother. And all of a sudden we see a figure step out of the shadows holding the cardinal's head. And this figure says, I think you'll find his repartee to be lacking from now on. And Royal's surprised to see anybody in his chambers. He turns, says, who? And it turns out it's Baron. So the avatar of death, or the embodiment of death in the Arcanum world. And he's there kind of as a warning to Royal. And the first thing he's done is annoy Royal by finally giving the Cardinal rest, right? He's like, I finally given the soul rest. You can't toy with him anymore. You know, you've had him as your plaything for centuries. And I freed him basically just to annoy you. You know, you've been playing around in my realm. You've been playing around with life or death. You humiliated me when you stole Blake's powers. Don't think I've forgotten that. And I'm going to have my revenge, basically. And remember, Baron is supposed to be neutral. He's supposed to be Switzerland. But yeah, clearly he's not here. He's saying you think you've ensured that I can't strike at you, but I can't hurt you. I can kill everything around you. I can disrupt your plans. By the time I'm through with you, you're going to wish that I could kill you. You've made an enemy of me. And, you know, lifelong enemies can be dangerous. And I live much, much longer, infinitely longer. So I'll be seeing you, and he disappears. And Royal's like, well, that certainly killed the mood. And as Baron returns to his asylum, you know, his club that he has various doorways around the world to this nightclub, which is really supposed to be neutral ground for avatars and their armies. Ming Chang is there waiting for him. And apparently she knows that that Baron went to talk to Royal, and she's, what are you doing going to Royal? You're supposed to stay out of things. You're supposed to be neutral. As an avatar, you can't. And he interrupts. He's like, wait, you assume much more than you know. And I don't remember ever claiming I was an avatar. And that Ming Chang, that surprises her. Kind of she's taken aback. And Baron says, beware of assumptions. So, you know, even I sort of assumed that Baron was the avatar of death. And it kind of made sense that Peterson would have Ming Chang join him because she's the avatar of life and they've decided to be neutral in this war. But Baron does seem to be much more powerful. I mean, it's one thing to claim neutral territory. It's entirely another to be able to enforce it, right? And he doesn't have a big army. He doesn't have, you know, people that he's teamed up with. I mean, he has Ming Chang now, but, you know, she's new to her powers and doesn't seem to want to fight anybody. So I always assumed that Baron had, you know, a level of power. He was a step above the avatars, but I still thought he was part of the same thing. Now I'm wondering if that's not the case. You know, I'm wondering if he's something more, because it appears to be that way. Meanwhile, in Venice, Italy, we see the avatars of the good. We see Ramat and Quentin talking, and basically Quentin has booked the avatars of good a passage on a freighter to get to Egypt to do whatever they're going to do. I was speculating on it when I was talking about the last issue. Maybe they're going to go look for Set to team up. Enemy of my enemy is my friend. Maybe they're going to go look for the temple that holds the gate to Heliopolis and recruit the current Horus and his mother Isis to fight alongside them. Or maybe they're just going to look for clues, some way to disrupt whatever Matthew Royal has planned. While Quentin and Ramat are standing here talking, Ramat's a little worried. He's like, I don't know if we should be splitting up, you know, the avatars and the mages. Maybe we should stick together. And Quentin says, no, we'll keep moving around the globe leading Matthew Royal and the Thurgist off your trail. Just make sure nobody uses any of their powers. Because if you do, then you're going to set off their sensors, basically. But if we keep moving around and screwing with their avatar hunt, you know, releasing little bits of avatar-like energy, we can keep them headed in the wrong direction. And Ramat seems to agree and says, by the way, what kind of ship is this? And Quentin tells him, it's a freighter hauling cargo, but I wouldn't look too closely at the cargo. Just trust me on that. So when I read that, I was like, what is it? Are they shipping slaves? Like what could be on there that the avatars would be, you know, afraid of? So meanwhile, in the, already on board the ship, we see Marie Eisenhower, we see Luis Benitez, we see Grigori, and the three of them are talking, and Grigori mentioned something about growing up on the streets of Dobrinja, which is in is a suburb near Sarajevo. And one of the men on the ship overhears, and he's like, I thought you looked familiar. That's where I'm from. And great, Georgie, he freaks out. He gets all mad. The guy's trying to find out, is that what you said? I mean, I don't speak English too well. Maybe I misunderstood. And it kind of, it makes Maria curious. She's like, why are you getting all upset, dude? He just, you know, it was an honest mistake. He thought you said something that you didn't, whatever. But Georgie, again, not sure why he's so mad, but he stalks off. And I mean, he's such a jerk. He's such a dick. He's not likable at all. I don't even know why he's on the Avatars of the Good, because he doesn't seem to like anybody on his team. He's always mad. He never wants to fight. Like, I'm kind of with Marie on this. You know, I don't get it. Like, what is your problem, dude? Like, constantly has a stick up his ass. But anyway, as they're arguing back and forth, Ramat comes up and says, what's going on? And Georgie says, isn't it obvious I've displeased Princess Marie? I think I'll save myself a lecture on how good war is and how bad of a person I am. I'm going to my cabin. Like, yeah, go away, dude. Go pout. Go. Yeah, what are you, PMS? Like, just go. So Marie actually calls after him, and Ramat's like, let him go. Something hit a nerve. Whatever's bothering him, he needs to deal with it. Like, I fully agree, Ramat. Like, the guy needs to grow up. Anyway, later on at night, after the ship has set sail, he's thinking about he hears a voice in his head that's talking about, men of Serbia, your duty calls you. You need to be soldiers in the Serbian army. We need to free ourselves and cleanse our country of all the other ethnicities. And we see Georgie in a soldier outfit, and he's firing with a sniper rifle, and it appears that he kills a little girl. Like, shoots her in the stomach with this sniper rifle, and she falls to the ground, drops her bear. And the voice telling him, you know, it's a sacred war. It's our sacred duty. So apparently that's what's bugging him. The guy hates himself because he was out there killing children. So again, I have to wonder, why the hell is this guy an Avatar of the Good? He's not likable. He doesn't appear to be intelligent. And he was out there killing kids. So I don't know, maybe Peterson set it up. He's going to get some redemption later on or whatever. But anyway, while he's remembering this, because it's not, you know, bad enough that the guy's an asshole, he's got to blow it. He's got to blow the whole mission, because while he's there thinking about this, he loses control and his ice powers manifest, and you see some ice forming around his hands. And immediately, back at the Athenum Thurlogical, their sensors go off. And the mages tell Matthew Rill, success, Archon. We have a signature. It's on the Mediterranean. It's moving too slow to be a plane. And Matthew Rill's like, yep, it's got to be a ship. We have people already in the area. Go ahead and activate them. And the next morning, the ship is kind of tossed and turned. All of a sudden, the water's getting choppy. And the four Avatars of Good rush up to the deck, and this giant golem comes up out of the water. I mean, it is huge. And they're like, why do golems only ever get bigger? Why don't they ever get smaller? So, you know, they start battling it as well as they can. Luis can't really do much. There's no rock or, you know, earth or anything for him to pull from to form armor, you know? So Ramat's firing his he's flying and firing his force beams at the golem as much as he can. We have Georgie, you know, trying to freeze it. We have Marie, you know, cutting off appendages as best she can with her sword. And Benitez, he's kind of useless. He's just running. And the other three are like, it's too strong. We're not gonna be able to stop it. Luis, you need to get in this fight. And he's like, well, easy for you to say, you know, I don't just carry around a bunch of granite, you know, to be able to form body. And he decides, you know what, I'm going to go see what the heck this ship is hauling. Maybe whatever's in the hold and can help, you know. And so he runs down the stairs. And when he gets down a little ways, he's like, oh, shit. And he's like covering his nose. And you wonder, okay, wait, what? What's going on? And all of a sudden the ship starts to tilt, and then we see Benitez in this huge form kind of break up out of the hold. And he says, Ramat was asking, where the hell is Benitez? And as he burst out of the hold, Benitez says, right here. Now the shit's really going to fly. And it turns out that what was in the hold is crap. Because Marie says, Benitez, your body's made of crap. Crap. It's made of crap. I know the ship is hauling fertilizer to Egypt. There must be a big demand for the fertile soil in the desert. So, you know, hold your wise ass comments until after. But he's basically a giant crap monster because they were hauling manure. So he's battling against the golem as best he can, all the while saying, I'm never going to live this down. But even he's not a big enough match. I mean, the avatars are good. They don't really seem to have good enough teamwork, honestly. They need to try to work together and use their powers together in tandem to try to accomplish things. So Benitez gets kind of knocked out and goes sinking down into the water, and his body like kind of shedding crap as he goes. As the others continue to fight the golem actually catches on fire, and they're like, look out, because if that fire hits the fertilizer, and sure enough, the fire does hit the fertilizer, and there's a giant explosion, which I don't know if that's really a thing. I mean, I know that fertilizer bombs because of the nitrates and fertilizer and stuff, but I think you need more than just, okay, I have, you know, manure that was being hauled in just piles in a ship, and then you just throw a match and it will explode. Like, I mean, this is a big explosion. It totally destroys the ship. And on the next page, we see that at least three of the avatars, but I don't think we see Benitez, but we do see Ramat, we do see Georgie, we do see Marie, and they're all washed up on shore. And there's a shadowy figure that sees them and approaches them. And all we get on that page, the only words are more secrets to be revealed. So where they are, did they actually make it close to Egypt? Who's the shadowy figure that sees them? What happened to Luis Benitez? We don't know any of that yet. So all that to be revealed in issue 7. And we do get a preview for issue 7 on the last page. It says, do the secrets of the ancient pharaohs spell redemption or damnation for the avatars of good? So kind of a little bit of a cliffhanger ending. And I'm very curious to know what's going to happen next. So we'll cover that on the next episode of Top Cow Chronology. So looking forward to checking that out. But I really enjoyed this issue. A lot of action. Didn't get a lot of forward momentum on the story necessarily, but it was good because it had been a while since we had the avatars of good versus the avatars of evil. You know, last issue was all about Matthew Royal and kind of what his origins were. So it was good to get an action-packed episode. We had some humor with the manure. We had Georgie acting like an ass again, which we've pretty much come to expect. And that thing with the Baron and what he's hinting about not being an avatar, being above. And coming right out against Matthew Royal, even though he's supposed to remain neutral. So, you know, this story has gotten a lot better since it started out. It's still 90s, and the dialogue is still kind of hokey in places. The art is still 90s art, and kind of bombastic and over the top. And even Brandon Peterson himself, his art has improved so much from back when he was doing this in 97. But even he now would tell the story differently, I think, nowadays in terms of how he would tell the story visually. I think he would do things differently in terms of layouts and kind of those collages that he puts together here. I just think, you know, it's different sensibility, different time. I think the most recent art I've seen from him was on Action Comics, I want to say. And it certainly was, you know, a much different style than in terms of his narrative storytelling style, not necessarily his line work or figure work, although that has improved over time as well, which is good because you see so many who had a different style to begin with, like a John Romita Jr. Or Ron Garney or somebody like that, and their style has evolved into something that I like less. Peterson's has evolved into something I like more. So, you know, it's just a subjective thing, but I'd be curious to talk to Brandon about this story now and how he feels about it looking back. So I may reach out and see if he wants to come on and talk about it when we get to the end. So anyway, it was one of the better issues, like I said, of the series. I was glad to get some action, and the story is ramping up. Great job on pacing and increasing the tension and kind of the mystery of what's going to happen next. So kudos to everybody involved. And I think that's it. So thanks everybody for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.